Thank you for joining us on this podcast from Hilltop United Methodist Church. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. The locals would say we are just a little bit east of the intersection of 7th and 106th on 106th. God's blessings to you. We hope to see you on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Peace be with you.
Sometime in the 1960s, the river that flowed through downtown Cleveland, sometimes called the Mistake on the Lake, caught fire. It caught fire because it was so polluted. It was so filled with waste. That's not the first time a river through a major U.S. city had had the same kind of thing happen. The Chicago River, which ran through downtown Chicago, for years would regularly catch on fire because it was just like that river running through Cleveland, so polluted. In the late part of the 19th century, engineers got together and decided they were going to fix that problem. Built hundreds of miles of canals. Actually, more canals were built on this project than were built for the Panama Canal project, going on at about the same time. And they eventually got to a place where they could release the water from Lake Michigan, and they literally reversed the flow. So instead of the flow coming from the south to the north, they released the water from Lake Michigan, and the water flowed from the south, from the north to the south. And the lake water purified the water of that river. It was ruled by one of the American Society of Civil Engineers. They named it one of the engineering projects of the millennium. There's a principle at work here in this of this engineering phenomena that describes our relationship with Christ. What Jesus does is even more astonishing. He reverses the flow of the human soul. Instead of the shallow, sluggish, diseased waters of human sinfulness, Jesus has opened the sluice gates of new and living water in each of us. For those of you that came to my class on Wednesday where we talked about this particular chapter, I will get to a lot of the things that we talked about on Wednesday, but next week, not so much this week. What I want to talk a little bit today about is the idea of water and how important it is for our lives. When you ask the question on the internet, how long can a person live without water? The answer is that it depends on how hot it is. But basically, somewhere between 3 and 5 days is the maximum amount of time that we can live without water. Water is an important element of our lives. Water is an important element to understanding the theology that's given to us in the Gospel of John. Very early in John, in John 1, when John the Baptist comes forward, he is operating with a traditional Jewish view of what water does. Water is for purification. It's to cleanse people ritually so that they are brought from a state of unworthiness to a state of worthiness by virtue of this washing that they have. But John gives us this first hint that there's going to be a change in the understanding of what water does. He says that I'm preparing the way for him who will come behind, and he will baptize you with the Holy Spirit. It's this idea of continuity with the past, but also offering us an understanding of how that continuity is changed just a little bit. Jesus' first miracle is very similar to this. The purification water is outside the room where the wedding celebration is going on there at Cana. So it's a tradition is being honored. But Jesus takes that water and he turns it into wine. Alan likes that one. That's one of his favorite passages. He likes water turning into wine. Am I right, Alan?
You're right on.
again, it's this continuity with the past, but again, altering it just a little bit because Jesus changes the nature of the water. And so it goes from cleansing to being a symbol of the joy that is found in new life in a marriage. In the passage where Jesus is having the conversation with Nicodemus, where Nicodemus doesn't exactly understand, Jesus will tell Nicodemus that he needs to be born again through the water and the blood. In John 5, there'll be a miracle that Jesus will perform. The leper is trying to get, the broken man is trying to get to a pool of water, and he's not able to get there. And Jesus comes along and says, that water is not what you need. What you need is me. And he heals the man and tells him to stand up and walk. In John 6, Jesus shows his authority over the water by walking on the water. And in John 7, you get this culmination of this conversation that exists, that Jesus starts here with this idea of the living water in his conversation with the lady at the well, with the woman at the well. And he comes back and he says, I am the living water, telling her that it is like the gift of the Holy Spirit that allows her heart to be opened and her life to be transformed. You might ask the question then, what is John's understanding of the Holy Spirit? The word in Greek that John uses for the Holy Spirit is comforter, advocate. It's an ongoing presence of Jesus post-Easter. It's grace living among us. It's the opportunity for us to be able to embrace the living Jesus here with us in our lives. John's idea of the Holy Spirit is God with us. It's the presence of Jesus in a post-Easter opportunity. One of the things that is important for us to understand is the idea of God's grace. One of the conversations that exists between those that are followers of John Calvin and those that are followers of John Wesley is the nature of grace. Calvinists at one time believed that God's grace was absolutely irresistible. You could not resist God and God's grace and God's invitation to be part of the community if you were part of the elect. Wesley did not agree with that. John Wesley would suggest that grace was indeed partially irresistible, this idea of God's grace that goes on before you assent to accepting the living waters in your life. It could be rejected. It could be something that you had to sign on for. We all have the power to reject God and God's grace. Is this Jack's fault? What do you think? Yeah. Here's the points that I would like us to take from the passage today. First is the fact that our need to take on this living water, this Holy Spirit, requires an action on our part. Jesus' offer of the Spirit is both universal and it's addressed to individuals. To anyone that is thirsty, let them come and drink from me. That's what Jesus will say. The first requirement we have then is therefore our need to recognize our thirst. Every one of us has a spiritual thirst, for it's part of the human condition. Our need, our thirst, is what we bring to our relationship with God. This verse is revealing in the fact that it reminds us that we need to acknowledge, as the woman in the well acknowledges, that we need to acknowledge to God that there is an action on our part in order for us to assent. Sin is our seeking relief from the thirst, the spiritual thirst that we have in something other than God. Sin is our seeking relief from this thirst in something other than God. If we then acknowledge that it's sin, it requires that we realign our lives a little bit, maybe a whole lot. For too long, we've often called unbelievers to invite Jesus into your life. Could I make an editorial observation with that? Jesus doesn't want to be in my life. My life's a mess. My life's an absolute mess. My guess is many of your lives are messes as well. What Jesus really invites us to do is align our lives with His life. That's the invitation. So realignment on our part isn't this inviting Jesus into our life. It's about realigning our lives in such a way that Jesus is the example that we follow. It's a wild and exhilarating and unpredictable opportunity. But just like that water flowing from Lake Michigan into the Chicago River, it will cleanse us out and our lives will be changed. That having been said, how do we get ourselves changed? This idea that Jesus gives to the woman at the well is that if you accept the living water, it's going to gush up in you. It's going to gush up in you in such a way that you are deeper, that the life is deeper for you. God invites us to move deeper into the gospel. God doesn't move us beyond the gospel. He moves us more deeply into the gospel. Because all the power we need in order to change and mature comes through the gospel. The gospel does not simply ignite the Christian life. It is the fuel that keeps Christians going and growing every day. Real change does not come apart from the gospel. It is driven by the gospel. So just like the woman at the well, each of us needs to recognize our own need for acceptance of this living water, of this Holy Spirit in our lives. Jesus invites those who know their need. It isn't unique to John. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 3, those who are poor in spirit are blessed. My guess is they know their need. The others are invited to take the initiative to come to Jesus and drink in John 7, verse 37. Drinking leads to believing. It refers to believing, which means aligning ourselves with Jesus, trusting in Him, receiving His teaching, and obeying His commands. Such faith enables one to receive the Spirit and enter an abiding relationship with Christ, the post-Easter Christ. All of this is based on who God is and what He has done for us. When we believe, we open our hands to receive what His grace offers. We come and drink. We come to drink through our own action. We come to drink through alignment on our own part, realignment on our own part. We come to drink by moving deeper into the gospel. We come to drink by recognizing our need for the living water that is Christ.